I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and you have arrived at Pop Culture Happy Hour, an entirely real discussion taking place over entirely imaginary cocktails. I'm here with Stephen Thompson, an editor at NPR Music, Trey Graham, an arts editor for NPR.org, and the Obi-Wan Kenobi of Monkey See, and Glenn Weldon, who's our comics blogger and Aquaman expert, as well as an NPR book critic. So why don't we have everybody talk a little bit about something that has made you happy this summer, culture-wise, entertainment-wise, something that is making your summer a little tiny bit brighter. Why don't you start, Stephen? And I psychically have a guess what you're going to say.
I don't know how surprising this is going to be, but I would like to talk briefly about the ABC TV series Wipeout. And its greatness. I believe it is our own pop culture blogger Linda Holmes who referred to this show once as an hour of watching people get hit in the face with pies.
And it's awesome.
And it's kind of better than that though. As much as I enjoy watching people get hit in the face with pies, it is as many people listening, I would imagine, probably know, Wipeout is an hour long. Sort of reality game show in which people run incredibly, increasingly elaborate obstacle courses.
And it goes like this, doing.
It is one of those things when it's over, someone will be like, how did you like Wipeout? And I'll be like, yeah, my favorite part was when it went boing, sploosh.
My favorite part was when the guy bounced off the one thing
onto the other thing and landed in the mud. It is my contention that the thing that makes Wipeout great is the careful application of sound effects.
they're very careful. Like, if you've ever seen, like, America's Funniest Home Videos, they'll really crank up the awooga button, and it's too much. It doesn't work. I mean, it's not funny to begin with. With Wipeout, it really is, there's a certain, they'll add kind of a thwack to people hitting things. And, for example, and there's sort of wit to it. I mean, I love the fact that they introduced an obstacle in the last few weeks, which was, I don't know exactly what it's called. I believe it was, like, pick a door.
Yes.
It's like, oh, which door do you pick? Do you pick, one, two, or three? And behind all three doors is a giant hammer that clobbers you. Right? And in that moment, I really thought, Wipeout is a metaphor, people. Wipeout is a metaphor. I love it so much.
Now, how does it compare to the American Ninja show on G4? Same basic premise, but I'm guessing less shirtlessness.
I will say the fact that I am expected to produce an answer to that question is an indication that I'm in the right room with the right people. I have not seen American Ninja on G4.
Okay.
But I would imagine it pales in comparison to Wipeout.
Well, my sense is that it's more, the Wipeout is more whimsical, and
is American Ninja a little bit more like, they are led into an auditorium?
There are hardcore shirtless Asian dudes going through this course.
Right.
It is, if you like shirtlessness, it's your show. Not a lot of shirtlessness on this show? On
no, it's, they have to
well,
wear.
No, and generally that's a good thing.
Yeah. Really? They're big people?
They try to put sort of everyday, everyday Americans. Mm-hmm.
By which they mean people who look funny falling down.
Yeah. Especially funny getting hit with a giant swinging weight that knocks them onto four inflatable balls.
Yeah. Now, I've seen that, and it seems like even though they go out of their way to make everything sort of safe, you could really hurt yourself.
Oh, yeah. There are times when there's an arm swinging one way or another, and you think, just the possibility that someone's going to snap a spine here.
They tend not to show you the injuries. There's occasionally somebody will opt out because they've clearly sort of separated a shoulder or broken an ankle or something.
I have to say the thing that surprises me the most is that more people do not lose an entire mouthful of teeth.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Because that's
they don't wear mouth guards.
That's
either.
What I always think it looks, even on a soft obstacle. I would think
the
you
weight of your body landing on your upper
on your
jaw.
Face.
On your face, yes. Yeah. When you land on your face, it's one thing to say your head's not going to crack open. It's another thing to say your front teeth are going to survive.
From what I gather from the actually great deal of reading I've done on this topic, they say that everything is just incredibly padded. And so presumably, even if you land with the full weight of your body from 10 feet on your upper jaw, you're still just kind of mushing into it. I guess sort of the last thing I would say about Wipeout and what I really appreciate about it is that I have a 9-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter, and the three of us sit down every week during the summer, watch Wipeout, and enjoy it on exactly the same level.
Mm-hmm. I think that is the perfect philosophy of Wipeout.
It is.
All right. Trey Graham. Something you love, something that's making you happy.
Well, I'm afraid this is not nearly as entertaining as a deconstruction of Wipeout, but I have to say that I'm really just falling in love seriously for the first time with Netflix instant streaming. I stopped paying for cable a few months ago, and it used to bother me a little bit, but there's so much now on the Netflix that I can just get. I've been digging through old BBC series, and somehow I don't care that I'm missing the new season of True Blood, and, you know,
because it'll be there.
Yeah, it'll be there. I wouldn't care about missing the season of True Blood.
But you are a straight man with a wife and children, and True Blood has Alexander Skarsgård.
Yeah, it all comes back to shirtlessness, I think.
Yeah, but the bad accents.
It is true. I should resent True Blood.
I don't know. I've never seen a vampire before. Yeah. Yeah.
As a native Louisianan, I should in fact resent True Blood more for the accents, but somehow I can't.
It makes you happy anyway, but not as happy as Netflix instant streaming.
Right. It's true. I've been digging through a couple of completely different series recently. One's called Coupling, which is like the British version of Friends.
Uh-huh. And there was a terrible U.S. version.
Yes, there was.
Version.
Oh, was there?
It was very, very short-lived. It went like this. Ha!
The British version does many, many things that would never pass muster on American television, which is probably why the American version never worked. It's much more explicit about sex and relationships and all sorts of nonsense than you could ever get away with on U.S. TV.
Now, because this is an NPR podcast, Trey, we do ask that you spell out the word sex.
Yes, S-E-X.
Right.
Thank and you're going to bleep that, right?
Yes, we're going to bleep.
Quick question about the Netflix. Now, this is entirely archival material. This isn't like, they don't have stuff like Hulu where you can watch.
No, it tends to be a little older. But there's a great archive out there.
There is a lot of, like, they have all the seasons of The Office. And
right, so when something is
got,
on...
They've got most of the seasons of Lost now, so...
So when something is on DVD, it's on Netflix.
Right.
But not everything is on
general,
there for streaming.
Yeah, right.
Not everything.
Gotcha.
Not everything, right. For sure. All right.
I still use a Betamax.
So. I'm sure you do. All right, Glenn Weldon.
All right. So there's this new season of Doctor Who. And I realize, as I say this out loud, I want to beat myself up and make my own lunch money.
Yep.
However, the new guy, Matt Smith, is the new Doctor. And a couple weeks ago, the Doctor went back in time, as is his wont, met...
As he will,
Vincent van Gogh, or because it's a British show, Vincent van Gogh, really the most annoying part of the entire episode. And he battled with Vincent van Gogh a giant killer chicken lizard... that was invisible from outer space. Now, the fact that it was invisible is what made it so cool, because they spent a lot of money on the sets. They spent a lot of money on the costumes. So there were several scenes in which both Vincent and the Doctor have pitchforks, and they're just set up poking the air. The low-rent quality of the show has always been its thing. It's kind of cheesiness. And in recent years, of course, with the new series, they've really upped their game. But, you know, good British special effects are like a rude Canadian. You know, you're going to have to kind of judge it on a scale. And it's just fantastic. My favorite thing about the show is that they dispensed with the giant chicken lizard pretty quickly.
The invisible giant.
The invisible. Yes. Invisible.
He was largely invisible.
So when they killed him, all you see is them going, phew!
Yeah. Exactly. Well, it's...
So he had a shimmer, like sort of a cloaked Romulan ship.
Yeah, well, you
how
could
did
see
they
him
know
in a mirror.
It was dead?
It's a whole... I could... It's a thing. There's an explication.
They took its pulse. They reached under the wing.
And now that I think about it, it was probably more a turkey lizard because it had a waddle.
Oh.
It had a space waddle.
Alrighty.
They dispense with
turkey lizard.
Right.
Invisible space turkey lizard.
Killer.
Versus Vincent van Gogh.
Right.
Giant. Killer.
Right.
Yeah. So... They
see. I'm having no trouble believing this because on the Netflix instant streaming, I've watched several seasons of Torchwood.
That's what we call bringing it full circle.
Yeah, so they dispense with the thing. They take Vincent forward in time to, I think, the Musée d'Orsay to show him that, you know, he'll be sort of a great respected.
What
artist.
In the hopes that this is going to cheer him up?
Exactly. And exactly. This is why I love the show. So they think, all right, well, everything will be better. Then, of course, they go back to the Musée d'Orsay after they drop him off, and he still killed himself. So the message is that, mental illness beats a Time Lord,
All right.
And that not even killing a giant turkey lizard.
Which you think would bond people.
Will cheer.
You think it would really
cheer up a depressed artist.
I think so.
The pharmaceutical industry will be very happy to hear this.
You hear that, ladies? You can't cheer up a depressive artist, even
just
if
cut
you
the cord now.
Give it up.
Just cut the cord.
Because remember, it is a kid show. That's what I really like about this. The reason it's good is because it's not just a show that you kind of put away and say, well, that was silly. They always leave you with something that you sort of have to think about at the end. And invariably, it's something that makes you want to take out your heart and put it in a box for a while because it just so as not to get hurt again. But it's just, that was such a good episode.
Aww.
I think that's the first time that I've ever gotten through a discussion of Doctor Who without nodding off as if bitten by a tsetse fly.
Yeah, well... Give it a shot.
My mom is a big fan.
I'm saying
and
give it
I
a
hear
shot.
About Doctor Who a lot. So.
I can imagine.
And now you've made it. All right. Well, my own happy thing of this summer is movies at the AFI Silver, which is a theater in Silver Spring, Maryland.
A very fine Art Deco.
A very fine, very, very pretty theater in Silver Spring. And they're currently doing their Summer of 80s movies, which I also went to a bunch of last summer. And it's great fun so far. This year I have seen Clue, Caddyshack. And Fletch.
Wow.
But the AFI is also where I recently went and I saw The Godfather on the big screen. Mm. I will say this for seeing The Godfather. You get out of that movie and you think, I know there were two Godfather movies, right? But when I look at the amount of plot that they managed to get through in The Godfather, it makes me think you have no excuse for splitting a Twilight book into two movies. That's what I thought. I thought if you can have that many people get shot, blow up, horrible things, epic battles, generations pass, people go from, you know, good, young to old and ruthless, and then there's Vegas, and it's just everything, right? But for Twilight... Oh, no, that's going to take us two movies to get through that last apparently quite epic book, or so I have heard, although I have not read the last one.
I am told that there are a lot of words in the last book.
Oh, there are a lot of words in those movies. What I've seen of the Twilight movies, which is a lot of scenes of people talking to each other.
Meaningfully.
Are there lots of scenes in Twilight that involve incredible action? Because I've only seen the ones in which a young woman looks sad and a young man looks like he's been eating a lot of cherry popsicles.
you have accurately described what happens in most of Twilight. And the thing about Twilight, the thing that's so funny about the book, and I can only speak to the first book because I read the first book and then I thought that is adequate. And then I went to Wikipedia to read what happens in the rest of the And I felt that I had fully taken care of that as an issue for myself. You can read like 200 pages of Twilight, and what will happen is like someone goes shopping and changes her shirt. And that'll be 200 pages.
It's a lot like Moby Dick. In
exactly.
It's not the first time it's been compared to.
Exactly. But I just saw the newest Twilight movie, Eclipse. And the thing that's weird about it is it's almost like now the movie is too competent. Like the first movie, the first Twilight movie was hysterically terrible, like just hilariously, hilariously terrible. Lots and lots of the sparkly vampire, which to me is so hilarious. It's one of those things where in a book you can sort of get away with describing someone as sparkling, but when you actually have a guy on screen sparkling, who looks like he has been sprayed by one of those girls who uses glitter hairspray, you know, and he looks like he was standing too close, you know, during the glitter hairspray application. You cannot get away with it. And this one is a little bit less ridiculous.
Right.
It is a little bit more competent. It has a slight meta sense of humor about itself in places, which is really unsettling. Yeah. There's actually a part where, you know, someone else in the movie acknowledges that, you know, Jacob the dog-faced boy needs to buy a shirt. And that's unsettling because now you're in this territory of you can't know you're funny.
Right.
You can't know it because that ruins the whole thing.
I've got a friend who once said of Dennis Miller joining the cast of Monday Night Football that it was sort of like what he loved about watching football was part like, are you ready to watch some guy do action? You know, and that he would sort of supply his own,
right,
his own teasing to it. But the notion of having somebody else.
Right, if the network is going to employ someone to do the teasing, then what are you, the viewer, supposed to do?
That I will fill in the wisecracks. Yeah. Thank you very much. And the other thing is sort of going from a half-star movie to a two-star movie.
Yes.
Is a huge step down, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A half-star movie is much more fun than a two-star movie.
You don't get to be Troll 2 if you're a two-star movie.
That's true.
Exactly. You have to be, you know, being a half-star movie or a no-star movie can make you fun.
Right.
Make you fun, but not a two-star movie.
And that's why we're here.
And that's why we're here. That actually does lead into our next topic, believe it or not. Thank you, Stephen Thompson, for
transition.
The segue. The summer's movies, you know, having talked about Twilight, Eclipse, it's kind of been a dismal summer for big commercial movies. And I personally, I have to say, as much as it pains me, I kind of blame Iron Man, who to me set the tone. I blame Iron Man.
I blame Iron Man!
Because Iron Man to me kind of set the tone that this whole summer has felt like, which is like I went to it, it was fun, it was fine. And then it was over, and I never thought about it again. And in fact, when I first started thinking about this topic, I thought, I went to see Iron Man 2, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I did. Mm-hmm. I did. Mickey Rourke.
You're aware that Glenn Weldon is in the room, right?
I am. I'm about to ask Glenn to reflect on
his hair is standing up over here.
I'm about to reflect on Iron Man.
No. I mean, I totally agree. I mean, it was fine. It was fine. The first movie set up all the origin stuff and was really, you know, that's kind of what engages you. That's kind of what grabs you. The second movie, once it's just big dudes wailing on each other in metal suits, you know, it's hard to kind of make that compelling.
But Glenn, he had an existential crisis.
He had an existential crisis. What was that again?
for a minute in the middle of the movie, there was some drinking.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's Robert Downey Jr. He's funny.
Well, that's what was
Robert Downey Jr. Be funny now. That's pretty much the way the movie.
Yeah. Well, that's what kills me about it is that I love him in that part. And the first Iron Man, I just absolutely love. I think the first Iron Man is a dynamite movie. I've been known to advocate for that as better than The Dark Knight, which came out the same year.
I completely agree.
To me, much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
And has some of the same appeal and some of the same good elements. And I loved the first one so much. And when I went to the second one, it was really kind of like, meh, you know. But and the whole summer has been like that.
Yeah, and you were saying it sort of set the tone for an underwhelming summer.
Yeah, of sort of movies that are, like, competent, you know.
But are we just talking about big studio movies or movies in general? Because, you know, there's actually a fairly chunky list of movies recently that have been really quite solid.
Well, what have you liked?
Well, I mean, you weren't impressed by Adrian Brody's subtle work in Predators?
I cannot say I have seen his subtle work in Predators.
You know, Splice, I did see, and it was really quite good, you know, until the last 20 minutes or so, and then it kind of goes off the rails with craziness. And once it does, you find yourself asking questions about bad decisions the characters made earlier in the film, and it sort of takes you out of the world of the film in a way that makes the film not stand up to any sort of inquiry. Yeah. But, you know, if we're going to look at indie films and small films and documentaries and foreign films, then it's actually been a relatively rich summer so far. I mean, I'm thinking of things like Restrepo, Please Give, the Nicole Holof Center movie with Catherine Keener. Cyrus got good notices. There was a tiny little movie called City Island. There's Tilda Swinton in I Am Love, which has been, on the one hand, celebrated as a really fantastic throwback to the Douglas Sirk films, and then on the other hand, derided as a sort of ridiculous romance that's out of touch with the middle class, because it's set among this crazy wealthy family.
There's the Joan Rivers documentary.
That's on my list.
But
the Joan Rivers documentary.
In any of these movies, does anyone drive a motorcycle off a skyscraper and onto the whirling blades of a helicopter?
Not that I have seen yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No. Well, because summer movies.
Yes.
Right. Like summer movies as we talk
about.
But
I have not yet seen The Love Ranch, which stars Helen Mirren and Joe Pesci, so it could happen. They're in Nevada at a brothel.
It could be that The Love Ranch involves Helen Mirren driving the motorcycle onto
Joe Pesci's helicopter.
Mm-hmm. Could well be.
Yeah. But Linda, you like Night and Day a lot more than a lot of other people.
That is true.
Including me.
You know, I wouldn't say I liked it a lot more than a lot of other people, but I liked it a little more than a lot of other people. Again, it goes into the category of, to me, being kind of competent. I mean, I think it is. I think if you were in the mood to go and see a Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz banter, action, silly movie, I think it was a reasonably good example of that. I think it's a reasonably, you know, well-done example of that. But at the same time, it's certainly nothing that you haven't seen a lot of times. It's sort of a, you know, it's a mishmash of what he did in Mission Impossible and what he's done in, you know, some other movies. And then she's very much doing what she always does, I think. Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, she's kind of got the nothing part. She's in the girly role wasteland, as we would say. She's not doing anything. But I don't know. I mean, Steven saw it yesterday or the other day. What did you think, Steven?
It felt saggy. It felt 45 minutes
and not just because of the plastic surgery. I'm totally lying. I don't even think that's even a true thing. I just couldn't help it.
I felt it. I felt the plastic surgery a little bit. It felt 45 minutes too long, even though it was an hour and 45 minutes long. And I don't mean that as that sounds like a bigger
I sort of thought
it was maybe two hours and 15 minutes, 2 hours 20 minutes. It's like an hour and 45 minutes, so it didn't feel paced very well.
I think that's a real hassle with an action movie if it can't keep you sort of engaged.
Well, yeah. It's also one of those movies where about an hour and 15 minutes in, you think, oh my gosh, she was refurbishing a GTO and there's this mysterious address on his cell phone. And clearly they're not going to end the movie without bringing those in at some point.
Right, they're going to be connected.
Which means at some point we have to get from here to the GTO.
Yeah.
And that is going to—that's clearly.
That's not going to happen in the next 8 minutes.
We're off in Austria or whatever. We're not getting to the GTO in less than 20 minutes.
When are we going to get to the fireworks?
There was a little bit of when are we going to get to the. I mean, there are just tons and tons of action set pieces all throughout that movie, but it was fine. It's one of those movies. I know Linda has this whole thing of how hot does it have to be outside before you would go to a movie for the air conditioning.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I do.
And I think you kind of came down on like 83 degrees for Night and Day. Uh-huh. And I was like 91.
Yeah.
It would have to be in the upper 90s for me, I think.
Yeah.
I feel about that movie like I feel about 2012 after the fact, having gone to see 2012. You know. Back when it, oh man, talk about movies being about an hour longer than they needed to be.
I did see Despicable Me a couple days ago.
How did you like Despicable Me?
I enjoyed it. I had been hearing really positive things about it, and I wouldn't put it on a par with, you know, with Up or with Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, which I think is completely fantastic.
Love that movie.
I think the writing. It is an incredibly underrated movie. And not that people don't like it, but I think that movie is completely fantastic. I would put it somewhat on the level of, like, I see a lot of kids' movies for some reason. I would put it sort of on a par with, like, How to Train Your Dragon, which is a very, very nice movie. Yeah. Kind of a mixture of fun and sweet. Mm-hmm. And has some great sort of throwaway gags. It's a fun, fun, sweet movie.
Well, I think in general, the kids' movies have held up better this summer than...
Yeah, I haven't seen Toy Story 3, but I've heard nothing but great things.
It's quite solid.
Mm-hmm. Toy Story 3 is very good. I think, you know, as you mentioned, people liked How to Train Your Dragon. People liked Despicable Me. You know, it seems like they're I don't know.
Well, I feel like before they'll go to the trouble of making the thing, I think they're more careful about the scripts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Than you would be with A Night and Day. And plus, you don't have to deal with Tom Cruise and, you know,
Who I'm sure is a delight.
Our official position is that he is doubtless charming.
Our official position is that he's extremely charming.
It's just taking more and more to get me out of the house to a movie anymore. It goes back to the Netflix streaming. Mm. It just goes back. I mean, for animation, sure. Why not? And for, you know, a big, silly action film, if there's a superhero in it, sure. But if not, I'm like, I wouldn't go to see it. Like,
Glenn has his biases.
Because everything is DVD-able now. Everything is, except for Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe, which is coming up very soon, which will be awesome.
Yeah. And which you're excited about.
I'm very, very excited. Oh.
I will say there is this quality now where you can wait. What, 3-4 months?
I know.
And by the time I drag my carcass to the theater, you know, I'm one of those guys who will be like, I should go see that, you know, the first Iron Man, you know, I hear it's quite good. And you know, it's $5.99 down at Target, you know, by the time I think to actually see it. I actually have seen Iron Man.
I should point out, however, that the reason I have not seen any of the Twilight films is that the first one, they have not made the first one available for renting on my iTunes box, on my Apple TV.
Well, I can loan you the
Twilight. It's not available. It's not available for free streaming on Netflix, and I'm certainly not going to pay for it.
So
I can help a brother out.
You've gotten the opportunity. All right. Well, now I want to challenge your mind. To challenge your brain. This is a little project that I worked up with Mike Katziff, who's helping us out on the in the booth, as they say, even though there's no booth. It's a filthy lie. And we're going to play a little game called Regrettable Television Pop Quiz. You should think of it having a kicky little theme.
I was going to say, is there a theme? Is there a button?
Regrettable Television Pop Quiz. Yeah, it does.
Hey, and, you know, that's nice.
Yeah, it's awesome. Isn't it good?
You'll have to sing it when we do
I think it needs a, you know, like a little pop noise.
Oh, yeah, at the end.
Exactly.
Regrettable Television.
Right there, yeah.
Right there. That's
pop quiz.
There you go.
Mike, you're just going to cut that together for us, right?
All right, so what I'm going to do is Mike's going to play you a clip. And I want Stephen not to shout out because, you know, Stephen has more of a taste for regrettable television as I do. So he might actually know these more readily.
I was just going to observe that there's no buzzer here.
That's true. You'll just have to shout out.
The word that you will shout out is, ooh, ooh, ooh.
That's okay. Right. Yeah. Three times. Ooh, ooh, ooh is necessary.
Right.
All right. And so we have a series of five. And we're just going to see how you do identifying these pieces of regrettable television. All right. Take it away.
Autumn and Fran both failed to identify Brussels sprouts.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Trey Graham.
Top Chef or Top Chef Masters?
Incorrect.
Trey has failed to identify the clip. Glenn, guess.
I got nothing.
You got nothing?
No.
Stephen Thompson, what is that?
Name that vegetable.
I believe that is from the 8th episode of this season of Hell's Kitchen, which I watched last night while trying to bone up for this podcast.
Exactly.
God, man.
Yeah.
It is Autumn and Fran both failed to identify Brussels sprouts.
When blindfolded, they also deafened them. Right. In case, so they couldn't hear their own chewing.
So that they couldn't hear the screams of the Brussels sprouts.
It's true.
I'm sorry, does that by definition make Hell's Kitchen a blatant ripoff of Top Chef?
No.
Because don't they have the same little challenge, right?
Where right.
you have
they
to identify the ingredients
challenge.
In a dish?
But they do. I think they started around the same time, if I'm not mistaken. Also, Top Chef is a challenge among people who can cook.
Who can actually cook.
Right. Yeah.
And Hell's Kitchen is clearly...
Is a challenge among people who smoke.
It's, yes, every single one of them smokes. But it's also like they will get, how do I put this, sort of like addled hot dog cart vendors and people who, was it, kill and eat their own animals raw? And
wow.
it's just among, I believe, Linda, you put it this way at one point, where everybody on Hell's Kitchen is somebody you wouldn't trust to cook, to heat you a lean cuisine.
That's essentially correct.
And so by the end, it's suddenly like, which awesome chef will run this restaurant? And you've watched the entire time, you've watched them like, the risotto's not cooked! You know, because they can't cook anything.
And
they're Scottish, apparently.
Right. Well, that's Stephen's Gordon Ramsay.
I see.
You know, when he yells at them about how the chicken is raw.
Donkey!
Yeah. Yeah, the chicken is raw, you donkey.
Right.
Is the kind of thing that they are told quite a lot. And get out. And
Shut it down!
Shut it down. Stephen's Gordon Ramsay's not very good.
No.
Okay.
But that's the idea. All right.
I don't realize how bad my impressions are until I'm wearing the headphones.
Right. Mm-hmm.
No, I'm sure. All right, hit it, Mike.
You're right. You had nothing. Your dog never came out here. I never flew your dog half across the country several times on my dollar.
Okay.
Every time crossing the country.
I flew Chloe out here once, and then you made me bring her back.
Let me ask you guys this.
Because you wouldn't clean up after I was not potty trained.
I was potty training her.
Okay, we don't want to care about the dog.
Good. Salient point. Good, insightful point. From the man just then at the end. Took him a while.
The gentleman at the end,
that's
you're
right.
You're with
I'm
that
all
guy.
For it.
But this is Masterpiece Theater?
Yeah.
So it's the ding, ding, ding. It's the Bachelor thing, right?
It is the Bachelor thing.
Right.
Oh, I was hoping for the matchmaker. Millionaire matchmaker.
Oh.
Oh, yes, yes. Trey enjoys The Millionaire Matchmaker.
Yeah. No, no, not in several seasons.
Perhaps have to return to that at some point. No, that is The Bachelorette. That is the devastatingly painful, uncomfortable interview with the most recent Bachelor and his now non-fiancé.
Right.
Shocking how that relationship didn't work out, given the history of none of those relationships ever working out. And actually, after they broke up spectacularly, another recent couple, one of the few that was still together in theory, broke up.
No, you're crushing Thompson's.
I know.
No.
Jillian and Ed broke
no!
up.
No!
Well, they seem so happy.
Seriously, what am I left to believe in?
Yes, that was the Bachelorette who was explaining the breakup of their relationship, and she was partly upset because after they got together, he, as you heard, was not hospitable to her dog. But he claimed it was because she didn't clean up after the dog.
Well, that wasn't... Yeah, I don't think that was the only reason. I think the actual reason is that they're both awful.
They are. And the weird thing is, during their season, he in particular seemed like he was mostly just an ineffectual, nerdy, dweeby dude. And then... In this interview, it was like he got angry and cold, and it was like Sigourney Weaver turning into Zool in Ghostbusters. All of a sudden, he was like, "Don't interrupt me." And it was like, you know, you expect him to sort of levitate, and then he's going to turn into a dog. And
one thing that I marveled at watching that horrible, horrible interview between those toxic people was usually it takes marriages like 40 years to build up that level of resentment. And what stood out to me, and you and I have somewhat debated this, but I just thought watching it that he just hated her.
Yes.
And he clearly realized from about 10 minutes after the cameras stopped rolling on their original season of the show that everything everyone had said about her, she's a spoiled child,
yes,
and everything, was just exactly right. And he just couldn't even look at her. And it was as if they had 50 years of balled up resentment. Mm-hmm. And
they already had, like, they had the thing about the dog. They had the thing about, they had a whole argument, believe it or not, about asking for directions. How classic is that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They had a whole thing. Oh, and then you asked me the directions, and then I told you, but then you didn't believe me, so you put up the GPS, and then, well, he tore the GPS off the windshield, and it was one of these things where, like Stephen is saying, it was like, wow, you guys got a lot of stuff going on in a very, very short period of time. So, well, I think we're glad they're not together.
It was very interesting, and I don't want to make, you know, obviously we don't want to talk about The Bachelor for like 15 minutes, but there was a really interesting scene.
Not that you can tell.
There was a really interesting scene. Seriously? No,
I must say, I am tremendously moved here, not by the fate of their relationship, but by Thompson's passion.
Right.
Yeah. Do me a favor and slide back off the edge of your seat for what I'm about to say. Which is that earlier in the episode, because we're currently making our way, plodding our way through another round of
hopeless, of pointless.
Hopeless, pointless romance.
Doomed.
Of Allie. Allie is on vacation walking the streets of Lisbon with a very handsome former baseball player. And they're walking along, and he's taking all these candid pictures of her, like, leaping in fountains and everything. And
As
one does. And she says in a voiceover, "It's really nice that we're doing this because this is what life with Roberto would be like." And I think she was sort of talking in terms of, it's not all going to be helicopter rides over volcanoes. It's going to be walking the streets of Lisbon.
Right.
And frolicking in fountains.
And you cut to an hour later, and he's hissing at her about the GPS. And she's saying that he threw the GPS. Yeah. And he's saying this. And she interrupts him. And he says, "Stop interrupting me." And I'm thinking, no, that is what life is going to be like.
Very quickly, was home this weekend, sat down with Mom. She was watching the Entertainment Tonight. They were doing the John Madden of this whole thing. There was a telestrator. They were circling his hands as he made the chopping motion. They had a body language expert on the show to break it down. And the thing itself was disgusting. This whole cottage industry around it was just terrifying. I had no idea that this kind of sort of parsing of these two people being very unhappy was kind of, you know, five minute chunk.
And I, for one, am delighted that we're joining in.
Exactly.
We are
part of the problem.
It is interesting, though, that it's something like the 17th or 18th cycle of this show. Mm. And it is, if you go to the supermarket, you look at the wall of newspapers. It is just Jake's betrayal. You remember, it's
Yeah.
That show's doing something right.
It's shocking. All right. Give me another one, Mike.
Someone that really stuck out to me was Andrew because he's Jewish, and so he wears a Yom Kippur. I believe that's what it's called.
I'm depressed now.
The editors,
speaking
the
of editors. Our cultural literacy and what the supermarket tabloids are doing to our nation.
A Yom Kippur.
You know the editor on that show was just like, "Gol!"
A Yom Kippur. Any guesses? Stephen knows.
I know.
I got nothing.
I got nothing.
You got nothing?
Mm-mm.
What is it, Thompson?
That is Big Brother. Is this the 10th season of Big Brother?
Is that
or
still
something?
On?
Is it still on? It's still on three times a week.
Yeah. Mm.
Julie Chen still being Julie Chen, is she?
She is still Julie Chen.
Mm-hmm. But first.
And, but first. And 21 hours a week on Showtime 2, you can watch Big Brother After Dark.
We actually don't do that.
No.
We actually don't do that.
Okay.
Even I draw the line somewhere.
We did, but that is indeed Big Brother. She was a little bit confused about the Yom Kippur that he was wearing.
It's like she had Jewish flashcards. And she got the name
just turned she got the wrong one.
She got, yeah. No, she got like the there was a term, Yom Kippur. I mean, she got it.
There was a thing.
She got a full syllable right.
She didn't make up Yom Kippur.
No,
like,
she
Yom Kippur is a thing.
No, I do know that.
It's just not the thing she
it's not the
it
thing.
All right, moving on.
I won't hike it up like Urkel today.
Urkel?
He is the nerd. Remember what I told you about nerds? That's who you want to marry because they make a lot of money.
Okay, I got this. This one I got. This show eats your soul as you watch it.
This, preach, Glenn Weldon.
You cannot.
Preach.
You must look away. This is Toddlers and Tiaras.
It is Toddlers and Tiaras.
I did not know
Glenn
this one.
Weldon for the win. Toddlers
that
and
one,
Tiaras.
The first three were worth 1 point each. This was worth 4
That's
points.
Right.
It's true. It's true. It is one of the pageant coaches explaining the ways of the world to, you know, a
well, at least it wasn't her mom.
Or whatever.
Explaining the truth.
No, it's not her mom. It's her pageant coach. Because, you know, she's five or
and
whatever.
She needs a pageant
and
coach.
Needs a pageant coach who comes into the house in a big fur coat and stuff like that.
So Toddlers and Tiaras, there needs to be a name for shows like this. There are certain shows you can only watch through your fingers.
Right.
Yes. Preferably someone else's fingers. So that they take any of the, they absorb anything that gets too close to you. It would hit their hand and not your hand. All right. Do we have a number five? All right, number five.
They've been playing for years and years. We've been playing this for years and years. And as a band, we have transcended instruments.
As a band, we have transcended instruments.
Wow.
Imagine a band that has transcended instruments.
Yeah.
Well, it's either it's an air guitar competition or it's Milli Vanilli behind the music.
It's not Milli Vanilli behind the music.
Mm. Wow, I do not know.
The background music was kind of game showy, kind of 1 versus 100.
That's not Downfall, is it?
No, it was actually. I'll kill the suspense. It was actually America's Got Talent.
Oh,
wherein the air guitar band was competing.
Oh,
and
was
they
so close.
Have them competing in the band category. So they're competing against all the real bands who play instruments. All of whom were arguing that, of course, naturally, they should not be asked to compete with. People
who actually
play
make
music.
Noises on their own.
Right. Yeah. So that was just the air guitar guy explaining. They've been playing for years. We've been playing for years. And as a band, we have transcended instruments. Mm. Yeah.
That's what I'm going to say the next time someone asks me if I'm actually a performing musician.
Right. I've transcended instruments.
Or, the next time your boss asks for your actual work product.
I've transcended work.
Right.
All right. I want to ask you one more thing about TV. We learned recently that Steve Carell wants to quit The Office after next season, this coming up season. And also, Alec Baldwin regularly announces that he's leaving 30 Rock at the end of his contract, which is not quite that soon, but I believe it might be the following season. At any rate, he sort of talks about that a lot, and then sometimes people feel like he's walking it back and nobody's right. really sure.
Alec Baldwin has been quitting whatever he's been doing since Beetlejuice.
It's very true.
To hell with this, says Alec Baldwin in 1988.
You could kind of recycle all your old Alec Baldwin headlines if it was like, Alec Baldwin says, not my fault. Also, I'm moving on. Also, I don't really like acting.
I'm sorry, but not really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, he always talks about how he doesn't really want to do acting. And, you know, could have fooled me, buddy. But
with all the acting.
So here's my question, and I'm going to propose this, and others may agree or disagree. You know, as critical as Steve Carell is to The Office, it is easier for me to imagine a version of The Office without Steve Carell than it is for me to imagine a version of 30 Rock without Alec Baldwin. Because Steve Carell, to me, you get a different boss. I advocated on the blog that they should hire Daryl from The Warehouse.
Which would be a completely different experience, which is good.
Go a completely different way, a completely different kind of boss, a character that they have not fully, I don't think they fully aired that guy out in terms of what there is there, and he's very, very funny. And so I was in favor of using Daryl. Other people have had other ideas, but I can imagine what The Office would look like with somebody else in that role. I don't know that I can envision 30 Rock without, I don't know what you do after Alec Baldwin. Without the Alec Baldwin, Tina Fey chemistry, I don't know what
that show is. That's what you lose. You can definitely have a different kind of problematic network head for her to bounce off of. But you're not going to have the sort of richness and the warmth of their friendship.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The sort of very warm, unlikely friendship that's at the core of that show, you're going to lose. And I don't know what you do about
it. And that chemistry is so complicated. They've worked it up over the course of several seasons, and it's very multifaceted.
Right. But I agree with you, but I wonder what that says about the ensembles on the two shows, where you can pop Carell out like a Lego brick and put somebody else in. Mm-hmm. But you really can't imagine doing that with Baldwin on 30 Rock. And I wonder what that says about the fact that the characters on The Office are a little bit more one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And the characters on 30 Rock are, well, I'm thinking of Jenna. She's not exactly right. And I'm thinking of Tracy, who's not exactly.
Well, 30 Rock is a much more manic show. Mm-hmm. And when you remove the gravitational pull at the center of that show, it's trickier. Whereas The Office is more dry. Mm-hmm. And so if you plug in, you have so many wacky characters on the show, the boss does not have to be a wacky character.
Right. Mm-hmm. Even if Steve Carell is not on The Office, you have a lot of key relationships on that show that would still continue among, I mean, obviously not only Jim and Pam, but you have, you know, other people who have developed characters and stuff like that. You have other relationships. Whereas on 30 Rock, I don't think of that as really a show about the relationships between the characters other than
Tina Fey and Alec
Baldwin, that one relationship.
Yeah,
other than that, what you have is a lot of, like Steven said, you know, you have a lot of manic behavior and a lot of people goofing around, and you have a lot of really big, really broad characters, but not necessarily, you know,
but all of that is almost entirely for the sake of Tina Fey's reaction and Alec Baldwin's reaction.
Exactly.
Almost everything those other characters do.
Well, and that show,
it's there
that show
for them
is,
to bounce off of.
That show is, if anything, in danger of being a little too manic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, I think it's always in danger of being a little too manic.
And so I don't know what they do about it. I think you may be right. I think both shows may really be in trouble, though. I think, you know, option C, maybe both are in trouble.
And the thing is, they're both already in trouble in the sense that they're both significantly more uneven than they were when they first started. I don't think either one of them is considered to be firing on all cylinders creatively compared to a show like Community, which, you know,
it really is completely and utterly fantastic. Not on the same wavelength as Wipeout. I don't mean to create some sort of equivalence
you wouldn't want to compare.
It's like choosing between your children.
Right. It really
After
is.
We turn the mics off, Stephen will choose between his children.
Actually, I will assign a show to each child. One is Wipeout. Actually, one is Wipeout.
That is true. So yes, we love Community. Community is you haven't really watched Parks and Recreation yet, but that is also a fantastic show at this point. They are both, I think, better than either The Office or 30 Rock at this point in history.
I can pinpoint the moment when I fell in love with Community. It's one line. It's the Spanish teacher is hectoring his students, and he's getting them to recite something, and he yells at them, and he says, come on, people, and he shakes his hands at them. He says, come on, people, hands, 90% of Spanish. That was it.
These are Spanish nombres.
I have never seen, I have to say, and I am bragging a little bit here about how prescient I was about this point, but I don't think I have ever seen Stephen react to anything, even Wipeout, quite as quickly as he responded to, like, the opening scene of Community. Yeah. Like, before the credits, he was like, okay, this is my favorite show. Yeah. This is my new favorite show.
Completely loved it. And I've talked to people who think that show starts a little slowly. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was instantly felled by it.
Oh, like,
I am a Spanish genius!
Yep.
We love Community.
And fantastic show.
And I was frankly dreading it a little bit because of the Chevy Chase. I thought Chevy Chase was going to be, you know.
Yeah, speaking of having just seen Fletch and Caddyshack.
Right, right. I thought he was going to be doing that. And he is kind of doing that, but he's off in his own little corner where they kind of throw him some things to do. He's got some business. Well, and then we're back.
And they all react to him the way we might react to Chevy Chase.
That is exactly true. They kind of give him the sort of...
So given Hot Tub Time Machine, is this the summer of Chevy Chase's return?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think the thing about Community, it is a nice return for Chevy Chase. I think it has definitely improved Chevy Chase's standing. But I think Community, honestly, has more been a big, big deal for Joel McHale, who I think for a long time was somebody who everybody who watched The Soup on E!, which is their little, you know, wrap-up show of entertainment news and things, he's been doing that show, and it's been hysterical for a number of years, and he's had a very much a cult following of people who thought he was a genius. But then this has really brought him out and I think really made him a star of the future, probably much more than he is right now. And it's a great ensemble. They've got a ton of people in there. They've got Troy and Abed are perhaps the greatest comedy team on primetime television right now.
So quickly developed this amazing chemistry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They've got my personal favorite interesting assignment actress, Alison Brie, who is on Community and also on Mad Men, where she plays one of the wives. So they've got a great ensemble. And I should also point out Jillian Jacobs, who tweeted the other day that her mother was going to be very excited that NPR had recommended Community. So she was very, very excited about the fact that this would really please
her. So what you're saying is that she was very excited about something you said.
She was. She was. She would have no idea it was me, and I'm sure simply saw it in her Google alert or something like that. She probably has a Google alert for Community. But she did tweet about it, and it was very heartwarming to me.
That is a wonderful show. My fear for that show is that it's going to become one of those shows like Arrested Development that's going to last two or three seasons, and everybody on it, you'll see them in every show from then on.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, obviously, every comedy writer and comedy casting authority in the world loved Arrested Development, and so you see Will Arnett in absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. You see all the bit. You know, I mean, Tony Hale, who's been on Community that season, also.
So I think that's a very plausible, sadly plausible outcome.
I hope it doesn't happen. I hope it lasts.
So watch Community and keep Steven's nightmare from coming true. So I think we should mention, obviously, the blog is MonkeyC, npr.org/MonkeyC. And I'm sure you can follow all of us on Twitter. I am at NPRMonkeyC. Steven.
I am at I Dislike Stephen. That's spelled STEPHEN.
Can we follow you on Twitter, Trey Graham?
You can at Trey Graham, simply enough.
Okay, how about you, Glenn?
For some reason, it's not my name. It's G.H. Weldon. Don't know why I did that, but I did that.
Is your middle initial H?
In fact, it is.
Then it is your name.
Then it makes more sense.
I'm going to refer to you as G.H. Weldon.
Yeah, that's...
He was going for a sort of Mencken thing, I think.
I think I was. I was Twitter Mencken.
And in your life.
Yeah, we're just going to call you G.H. All right, that's about it for Pop Culture Happy Hour. Thanks for hanging out with us, and we hope to perhaps try it again someday. We'll see.
I would be up for that.
You might be up for that? All right, well, we still have to get to Glee for Trey. And we didn't even spend an hour with Glenn talking about Aquaman.
Well, next time.
We should do a special.
We'll do an Aquaman.
We're going to have to do a Golden Age. Silver Age.
I'm going to have to do some light reading.
It's going to have to be a full setup. Next time. Anyway, I think that's about it. Thanks, everybody, for being here. And thank you for listening. And this has been Pop Culture Happy Hour. We hope to see you around.